2067 is a podcast about the future, seen through the lens of emerging research interests at Concordia University. How do we imagine the future? In the 50s and 60s, there was a creative imagining of technology as well as the future, most of it utopian. Think images of flying cars, cities under glass, helpful robots, aluminum clothing, and personal jetpacks. Some of these ideas about the future were not so far off. But what inspires our future thinking now? Can we use university research to imagine new possibilities? Can we speculate along with researchers about what's next? What's in our future? This is 2067.
At the end of the day, humans want to connect with other humans. And even robotics and even space exploration fundamentally has to be about that.
In this episode, Chris Gonyenshna tells us about the links between robots, space exploration, the environmental movement, and the survival of the human race. Do robots pave the way to vacationing on Mars? Will we be able to live on the red planet by 2067? And if so, at what cost?
I'm Chris Gonyenshna. I'm an assistant professor in the Electrical and Computer Engineering Department here at Concordia University. My research is on space robotics. Sending humans out into space is very complicated and very expensive. And it's an endeavor that I very much support. I think human exploration is something that is very important for our species to be doing, but I think that robotics is a great complement and a great preliminary step to a lot of that exploration. Even for the great space accomplishments that we remember from history, the Apollo landings, those were preceded by robotic landers who tested whether the soil was something that could sustain a spacecraft landing or an astronaut footprint. Robots are always the ones exploring just ahead of us. And while they're there, they can also be answering great and interesting scientific questions, doing exploration in their own right, so we can learn fascinating things about our solar system.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
There are several parts to that question about why do we explore space. First of all, one of the things that not many people realize is that although individual space missions and so on can be expensive, they actually make up just a tiny fraction of national budgets and things of that nature. For NASA, it's only 0.5 cents out of every dollar spent by the government goes to NASA. A lot of people think that they do this amazing stuff. They must be spending 5 to 20% of the federal budget. And that's just not the case. Maybe it was during Apollo, for example, but it hasn't been for many years. So the price tag is actually not that high. And then there's also the idea that there are short-term problems and there are long-term problems as well. And a lot of the work done in space exploration is looking with the longer time horizon. And I would argue that we need to, yes, be definitely spending a lot of our resources working on making life better for everyone here on Earth today. But I think certain things like addressing the idea of climate change, looking at protection from wayward asteroids, these are things that have a huge impact on life here on Earth, and that just wouldn't really register without the space program. Without satellites to analyze data here on Earth, we wouldn't have nearly as good of an idea of how our environment is doing. And actually, I think in a personal sense, seeing photographs from the original Apollo missions of the Earth hanging out there in space, I've read in certain contexts about how that was really tied into the birth of the environmental movement, because it was a very visceral example of the fact that, you know, this really is something that we need to protect because we're all in it together, and it just creates that stark image against the black background. What we study in particular in my lab is how robots interact with dirt, how their wheels drive on soil, how their sampling equipment can dig into the soil and collect samples for measurement or for return to Earth even. And those sorts of things, which may sound simple or mundane, can be very difficult in these challenging space environments. On the moon, where there's no atmosphere, and on the moon or Mars, we have reduced gravity. And the soil that you interact with behaves differently when you have lower gravity than we do here on Earth. And that's a phenomenon that we really don't understand yet. So it's something that I'm trying to get to the bottom of in my research. So based on those measurements taken in past space missions, there have been soils that have been developed to try to mimic the way that those soils work. The challenging environments compel us to find new ways for robots to move around on these surfaces, potentially leading us to need to actually redesign the robots themselves to deal better with these unique situations and unique conditions. And one thing that we might actually need to do is reinvent the wheel, so to speak, because what we've been using in our rovers are things that we've tested here on Earth, in Earth gravity. And we really don't know whether that transfers over. And we've been seeing some difficulties that the NASA rovers have encountered, like the Spirit rover that got stuck in loose, deep soil. And on the other hand, the Curiosity rover, whose wheels have been getting punctured and torn by different types of Martian environments. So you might look at something like a rover wheel and think, oh, well, it's a wheel, should work. But oftentimes, it's a lot more complicated than that. Ever since I was a kid, I was fascinated by space. And that was really the motivating and driving factor for me to get interested in science and engineering. And when I chose to follow engineering, when I was leaving high school, I was actually debating between going into engineering or English, which are two very different fields. But what ultimately drew me to engineering was the potential opportunity that it would allow me in some small way to participate in the exploration of space. And growing up in Canada, a big part of that was seeing the space shuttle, seeing the Canadarm, seeing this technology in action. So when I started thinking about parts of engineering that would interest me, that's what really actually led me to an interest in robotics, my interest in space and Canada's existing expertise and reputation of having this in space robotics. And then actually when I was pursuing my degree, I did a co-op term with the company that originally developed the Canadarm. And, you know, that was a great feeling for me. At the time, I was working on Canadarm 2, which was the follow-on to the Canadarm, the robot arm for the space station this time. So it was a great opportunity to get to participate in that. At the time, I was working on studying and analyzing the performance of the Canadarm 2, which was already up on the space station, but I did get to contribute to the mission by making sure that everything was running smoothly and doing some simulations and analysis. One of my favorite movies is WALL-E, and it's just such a touching story about love between two robots, and it's very humanizing in that sense. And at the end of the day, humans want to connect with other humans. And even robotics and even space exploration fundamentally has to be about that.
In this episode, Chris Gonyenshna on why space exploration matters to us here on Earth.
Canada is definitely very well known for space robotics. The Canada arm is on our $5 bill. And it comes from, interestingly, it comes from research that was originally done for the nuclear industry. Canada's development of the CANDU nuclear reactors led to the development of some robotic arm technology. And NASA was very interested in this technology. And when Canada and the U.S. were looking for ways to partner up on the development of the space shuttle, this robotic arm technology was pointed to as a very interesting component. And that led to Canada developing the Canada arm for the shuttle, which has sort of launched Canada's reputation as being the premier place in the world for space robotics. I think looking forward in the next 50 years, Canada has a lot of opportunities to really contribute to the international efforts to explore our solar system. We have great partnerships with the U.S. and NASA and with the European Space Agency, and participation in missions with these larger space agencies are a great way for Canada to make its mark.
This will come as quite a shock to my crewmates and to NASA and to the entire world. But I'm still alive. Surprise. Woo! In your face, Neil Armstrong.
One of the research projects that I have ongoing right now that's really exciting is an opportunity to actually try rover technology on soil in reduced gravity. Now, of course, this isn't sending something directly to Mars, but what we can do is mimic Martian gravity and how it acts on the soil and the rover together. By flying in an airplane and flying specific trajectories that create these reduced gravity conditions. So you can imagine if you were in an airplane and you went into free fall, you'd experience weightlessness. You'd experience this zero-G type effect. So if you have a controlled flight that is almost but not quite free fall, you can get this constant uplift and you can experience a reduced level of gravity, which we can actually tune to be just right to mimic a Martian condition. And essentially what you end up having to do is flying these giant roller coaster type flights. So much like you feel your stomach rise at the crest of a roller coaster, we're going to be doing that except in a Falcon 20 aircraft. So with our equipment on board and with a soil bin and our robotic wheel, we're going to be seeing just how it is that reduced gravity affects the soil and thus the wheel as it drives through it. Well, I'm hoping that, first of all, we'll have humans on Mars by 2067. It's unfortunately one of those areas of the technological future that seem to be 20 to 30 years away, no matter when you are. But I am cautiously optimistic that within the next 50 years, we will have humans visiting Mars. Personally, I think that 50 years is too short still to have humans living there permanently. But I think longer term, that's a goal we should be working towards. And yeah, I think actually for anyone who's seen the movie The Martian, for the most part, they get a lot of things right as far as how the mission might need to look in the sort of in those early human exploration years. You know, like any good story, they take some Hollywood license as well, make things dramatic at the end and so on. But a lot of the format of these teams, small teams working together with a lot of support missions having been launched in advance with robots and other launches preceding the humans. I think in 50 years, we can see missions that might resemble scenes from The Martian being a reality. I hope that within the next 50 years, the robots that we see traversing other planets will be operating a lot more like sand buggies do for hobbyists here on Earth, sort of zipping around and getting up and down hills with much greater ease. Because right now, the robots that have landed on Mars have been a phenomenal success, but realistically, we're at the crawling phase, where they're crawling around and just starting to touch the edges of the interesting areas. There are a lot of great areas on Mars that we wouldn't send robots to yet because we wouldn't know how to explore them, like cliff faces and steep craters that are actually the most promising places for doing science and searching for evidence of life. But the robots as we have them now, they just wouldn't be safe in those places. So I'd love to see robots that have a much greater ability to move around, to stay safe in soils and in these terrains, so that we can explore these really interesting areas of this planet. Even though we've discovered Earth-like planets, we've yet to discover another source of life. It's one of the big reasons for wanting to study Mars, because if we could find evidence of life having developed independently from life on Earth, even if it's not there now, then that would be huge as far as our understanding of how things work. But until we find some other evidence, we're it as far as life or intelligence and things of that nature. So maybe it's the case that there is something special that led to life here on Earth that is actually very difficult to replicate in other places, that maybe it is exceedingly rare for the particular conditions to have arisen, in which case I think that should really humble us and awe us to think of the fact that, you know, we have this unique opportunity that really is that rare. Or on the other hand, maybe the universe is teeming with life and intelligence, and actually we're just so simple and we're approaching it from such a naive point of view that we don't even realize how to look properly for these sorts of things. You know, maybe we're the ants in a mud puddle thinking about, you know, why aren't there any more interesting things in this mud puddle or something like that. Don't even realize what's around us. So I think it's a fascinating question. And I think whatever the answer is, the question compels me to explore regardless of what the answer might be. Because I think either way, it should make us feel humble and in awe of the possibilities that are out there. So for me, the really sort of ultimate long-term goal of space exploration is the continuity of humanity.
In this episode, Chris Skonjenchna told us about how robots and space exploration are essential to the survival of the human species. Join me next week in 2067. What will voting look like in the future? Jeremy Clark and I talk about technologies and issues that will shape how we vote.
2067 was created and produced by the Thinking Out Loud team at Concordia University. Thanks to Concordia's researchers, guests, and our host, Francine Pelletier. For more 2067 episodes and other Thinking Out Loud podcasts, check out our website, concordia.ca/TOL.